Good morning, everyone. The chair calls the Education Finance Committee to order for Monday, April 28th, 2025. We have a robust schedule, so I'm going to keep us moving. We do have a quorum. A quorum is present. Representative Bennett, have you had a chance to review the minutes for Friday, April 11th, 2025? And would you move the approval of those minutes?
I have, Mr. Chair, and I move those minutes.
Any discussion on the minutes? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those say no. Minutes are approved, and we can now move on to the business at hand. So, members, we have one item on the agenda for today, and that is to review the bipartisan education finance budget agreement that will be in front of you today. We have a couple procedure motions to make all of this happen. The nonpartisan staff will be walking us through the agreement, followed by public testimony, and will then adopt the DE. There is an amendment to be offered to the agreement, which we will consider after public testimony. The primary purpose of today's hearing is review and discussion of the agreement, and House File 2433 remains the primary vehicle for our agreement. That bill should be heard and acted on in Ways and Means tomorrow. Before we proceed, I will note in your folders, you should have a copy of the DE amendment and several spreadsheets. House File 1384, authored by Chair Youakim, is the vehicle for the committee delete all, and then we'll have the delete all amendment. So with that, Chair Youakim, would you like to move House File 1388 before the committee with the chair's intent to lay over the bill?
Yes, I would, Mr. Chair.
And I will then, the chair moves the DE 2 amendment to have that before us. So before we get started, Chair Youakim, before I recognize nonpartisan, would you like to make any brief comments and introduce?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I think we talked about me covering the fiscal part and then you the policy part, so I'll just dive right in. Those of you know, we had targets of $40 million in the first biennium for the READ Act specifically and zero for the target in the TALES. While we made great progress in the 23-24 session in both finance and policy, there is still more to do in the growing need to meet the growing needs of our school districts, teachers, and students. I would like to thank the leadership team for a positive target for the READ Act, but the zero target the TALES does not allow us to provide an increase in investment in our schools. What we're able to do with this bill is to provide some flexibility in funding streams that the districts have been asking for while protecting the integrity of what the funding streams were intended to be used for. While this is not the bill I would have written myself and what Chair Cresha might have written alone, it reflects a compromise that a dynamic of a tied house required for us to fund our schools. And I just want to thank Chair Cresha and our partisan staff and nonpartisan staff for hanging with us as we worked through this together. And I'm happy that we're able to protect some of the major provisions we put in place last session. We kept policy changes to a minimum, and Chair Cresha will go over those. In the finance arena, we were able to protect linking the general education formula to inflation and universal meals, among other items. The funding stream adjustments that we made, we were able to fill out the funding and unemployment insurance for our hourly workers for the coming summer. That was Representative Reams' bill. And we provide an ongoing flexible funding and basic supplemental aid that school districts can use to cover these costs going forward. But my biggest disappointment is having to make an agreement to remove unemployment insurance for our hourly workers after the summer of 2028. The hourly workers in our schools play a pivotal role in our students' education and deserve the same benefits as other hourly workers across the state. It is my hope that we can find a way to retain that unemployment aid going forward. We are able to maintain the intended use for the student support personnel aid for our licensed school social workers, counselors, nurses, and psychologists. We did have to slow the growth in per pupil aid, and I will cover that when I talk about the reductions and allocations we made. All of us have been very concerned about how our state dollars are being used and wanted to rethink legislatively appointed grants. Most of the grants we do have in K-12 arena are one-time funds, but there are a few that have base funding that were legislatively appointed versus a competitive grant process. Those grants are the Center for the Book, Starbase, Blackman Teach, TOCAD Administration, and the Sane Foundation. We're able to keep the grant funding in the first biennium and then remove funds from the base in the second biennium. The exception is the Sane Foundation that keeps funding steady in 26, cuts the grant in half in 27, and then removes the base funding in the second biennium like the other grants. It is my hope that next year we can all figure out together a process in which nonprofit and school districts can apply to MDE through a competitive grant process. While we do not have the funds to provide MDE, Pelsby, BOSA, and State Academies or Perpich with their operating adjustments, we're able to keep their base funding as is. We were also able to fund MDE's litigation costs request at $4 million instead of the $6 million that was requested. Other investments, there was $40 million in the first biennium for the READ Act that will be distributed to schools on a per-pupil basis, which equals to $2,000 or $45.70 times the number of students served by the districts, charter schools, or cooperatives, whichever is greater. I would like to thank Representative Clardy and Representative Mueller for all your work on the READ Act, as well as the time put in by Representative Perez-Vega and Representative Vernig. We fund a task force to examine compensatory aid revenue formula, and the Minnesota Youth Council, LTFM for roofs in the, sorry about that, the compensatory aid was Representative Feist, Youth Council was Representative Senator Mira, LTFM for roofs in the second biennium, Representative Vernig's, consolidation and transition aid in both bienniums, Representative Dotseth. We had Math Corps from Ray Wauer, MapStars from Clardy, or from Berg, and we fund the intermediate SPED apprenticeships for $6 million in the first biennium from Representative Clardy. We captured $2 million of MDE funds that would have been canceled back to the general fund after 2025. The reductions and reallocations that we made in order to create the basic supplemental aid from our school district, that was a bill of Representative Bakeberg's. This is a per-pupil funding stream that districts will receive and that is flexible as general education. In order to create this funding stream, we slowed the growth in student support aid, reallocated library aid funds into the BSA account, and we slightly reduced the 100% reimbursement for transportation costs for students with special needs. So originally, SSPA was set to increase in the 26 and 27 and stay steady in 28 and 29. We slowed that growth a bit to $40 a pupil in 26 and 27 and $42 a pupil in 28-29, and BSA can be used to enhance funding in those districts if those districts choose to do that with that money. We reduced the special education transportation reimbursement from 100% to 95%, but maintained the 100% reimbursement for highly mobile and homeless students. Any difference can be covered by either the SPED cross subsidy or the basic supplemental aid. That'll be a district's choice. And I will now turn things over to Chair Kreisha to explain the policy changes.
Thank you, Chair Youakim. So one of the things that I want to go to before I go too far into this is, on a personal level, a big thanks to my partner, Chair Youakim, and the staff that we worked with and all of the members. This bill is a functioning bill. It's a bill of policy, and we're a committee that has to get the policy and the finance correct. And while we can look at the parameters that we were giving with what the targets were handed to us and the very uncertain times, I think working within those boundaries was always respectful. And quite frankly, I will just a nod to my partner. Chair Youakim has been around and the chair of property taxes as well as education policy and now at finance. And her experience and knowledge in all of those areas culminated into always very thoughtful conversations, which I believe led us to the best agreement that we could get to at this point. And so with that, I thank Chair Youakim and her staff and the collaborative nature. And I think it's fair to say that we got some things that will help schools become partners with us going forward. For the part that I have, we prioritize funding that is fair and flexible. There continues to be a commitment to the science of reading, and we ask the agencies to set fiscal priorities just like our school districts are going to need to. We begin to unwind the base funding for legislatively named nonprofits, and as Chair Youakim identified, possibly we can find solutions down the road to make those into a better process. I think that anytime there is the possible perception that something is going awry or that it's not fair, we look bad across the board, so we need to help out those that are trying to work with our schools. And most importantly, there's a bipartisan agreement for the House that we should not be cutting funding for education, despite what was originally put together with the governor and the Senate's cut tails. We ask that, and with that, as you can tell, Chair Youakim does her homework very diligently and is very concise with all that. I'm going to now turn it over to nonpartisan because details are not my thing. So with that, I will ask nonpartisan to take us through the bill and the spreadsheets, and we do have a number of testifiers. The goal is to walk through this and then get testifiers and offer the, there is an amendment, and be out of here at 10:45. So with that, Mr. Strom, I'll begin with you.
Mr. Chair, members, there's a bill summary in your packet. Co-chairs Kreisha and Youakim have done such a nice job of summarizing that I'm not going to go through line by line on the bill summary, but just mention what's in Article in each article, and I'll start with Article 1, and Ms. Carroll will start with Article 2. The general education article in Section 1 is the increase in the consolidation aid that starts in fiscal year 26 and is a permanent increase in that formula amount. Then there are a series of changes that change the name of the local optional revenue program, often goes by its acronym LOR, to basic supplemental revenue. And those are sections 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, 8, and the revisor instruction at the end. The key amount of this, other than the name tag, this changes the new first tier of basic supplemental revenue. This is provided entirely in state aid. It's available for charter schools as well as school districts, and the amount is set at roughly $40 for the first 2 years and $43+ for fiscal years 28 and later. The next set of changes have to do with compensatory revenue. This is Section 6, where the building allocation, which right now current law requires at least 80% of the revenue to remain at the building site, would allow a board to allocate up to 40%, so requiring only 60% to remain at the building site for the next 2 years only, for fiscal years 26 and 27. This change is also accompanied by a compensatory revenue task force that you will find in Section 16. This task force will take a comprehensive look at compensatory revenue. You can look at the language in the bill to see the duties and the membership assignment to that group, and requires a final report, an intermediate report first, and a final report by September 15th, 2026. Finally, the last change of substance in this article is the unemployment insurance change. These changes essentially fund the unemployment insurance for the remainder of the 2025 summer, keep the requirement in place as it was enacted in 2023 through the end of the summer of 2028. And then there's a little bit of additional language in the in what's commonly called the repeal of that exclusion. The unemployment insurance sections in 9 and 11 to 14 for the denial of service between terms separates out the higher education employees and keeps those unchanged, since those are not within the jurisdiction of this committee, and instead essentially put back in place the pre-2023 law changes to between term coverage for hourly school employees. Mr. Chair, the chair's bill regarding the Little Falls in Section 15, the Little Falls School District's grant, clarifying that the purchases that were made before the official approval date are indeed valid. Mr. Chair, that's a summary of Article 1.
Thank you, Mr. Strum. Ms. Pear.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Article 2 is the Education Excellence article. Section 1 modifies the Math Core program. It requires Math Core to use evidence-based instructional support to evaluate and accelerate student learning on foundational mathematics skills, and defines evidence-based. Section 2 extends the appropriation from for the 24 and 25 fiscal years to go through June 30th, 2027 for the full-service community schools. Section 3, it has the appropriations that Ms. Beckel can walk you through, and has some changes from the base budget to particular programs, including MapSTARS, Minnesota Math Corps, Minnesota Youth Council, the SANIF Foundation, and Starbase. Article 3 is teachers' article. Section 1 modifies the student support personnel aid. It sets the per pupil allowance at $40 for fiscal years 26 and 27 and 42 thereafter, which is a change from current law, which would have increased the per pupil allowance from $1,708 to $4,873 for 26 and later. It also expands the uses of the aid to include up to $5,000 per year for employee training, job embedded coaching, and qualifying travel expenses among school buildings for support staff. It also has a provision for districts with declining enrollment to allow them to use funds to retain student support personnel to maintain an existing position that would otherwise be eliminated due to the budget. Section 2 has the appropriations that go through the Department of Education, and changes from the base budget relate to special education, student support personnel aid, and Black Men Teach Twin Cities and the Coalition to Increase Teachers of Color and American Indian Teachers. Article 3 has the appropriations that go through the PELSB, and Section 4 is a revisor instruction that applies to two sections. The first changes the term pipeline to pathway in the special education teacher program in Section 122A77, and the second renames the Collaborative Urban and Greater Minnesota Educator of Color Grant Program to be the Educator Tuition Assistance Program. Mr. Chair, that is Article 3.
Thank you, Ms. Fair. And did you want to go through any more? Back to you, Mr. Strong.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Article 4 is the American Indian Education article. The one change of in language in this article is picking up the governor's recommendation that the American Indian teacher preparation grants be targeted for those that are teaching in intending to teach in the pre-kindergarten through grade 12 setting. Essentially excluding those that may be interested in using the grants to find employment teaching in a higher education setting. Article 5 is the special education article. There's one change in this article, as Chair Joachim mentioned. This is that beginning in fiscal year 26, the reimbursement rate for special education transportation, other than that for the homeless, highly mobile student population drops from 100% of the eligible costs to 95% of the eligible costs. Mr. Chair, that's a summary of Article 5. Article 6 is the facilities article. There's a couple of provisions in this article, Representative Vernick's bill to require or to allow all school districts to include in their LTFM plans roof repair and roof replacement costs is effective beginning with fiscal year 28, which is the 27-28 school year. And the second group of changes is the change the department brought to us regarding their review and comment of building proposals that are done through a capital lease program. Those changes are in sections 5 to 7 of that article. Mr. Chair, members, Article 7 is the school nutrition and libraries article. There's three changes, two of note to this article. The school service fund, the uses of the revenue in that fund, the legislature in this section has tried to clarify that those should be as broad as the uses that would be permissible under federal law. Secondly, a minor change, the governor recommended the summer electronic benefit transfer program funding aid. The small amount for administrative support is targeted to the providers of those programs instead of being kept at the agency. And finally, in Section 4, the repeal of school library aid happens beginning in fiscal year 26. So fiscal year 25, rather, the current school year, is the last year that library aid would be paid. Mr. Chair, the next article, Article 8, is the early childhood education article. Due to the arrangement of the budget agreement, there's provisions in this article that have three sets of appropriations that Ms. Speckle will talk about. Those include to the Department of Education, the Department of Children, Youth, and Families, and the Office of Higher Education. Mr. Chair, members, there are no changes in Article 9, the Community and Lifelong Learning article. And that's it for Article 9.
Ms. Fair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Article 10 is the state agencies article. Section 1 establishes a new standard for the Department of Education when awarding or administering grants. And these prohibit the department from issuing a grant to a nonprofit or requires the cancellation of existing grant under certain conditions. Section 2 cancels two portions of the Department of Education budget that would otherwise go unspent, one part for the Office of Inspector General and one for rulemaking for special education specific learning disabilities. Section 3 is the appropriations for Pelsby. Section 4 is the appropriations for the Department of Education, including the litigation costs. Section 5 is the State Academies, and Section 6 is the Purpich Center. Article 11 is the READ Act, and Section 1 amends as a subdivision establishing the legislative intent of the READ Act. The next set of sections relate to the definitions used in the READ Act. Section 2 clarifies the definition of a certified trained facilitator. Section 3 modifies the definition of evidence-based to include science of reading. Section 4 modifies the definition of oral language. 5 defines science-based reading research. That's a new definition. Section 6 modifies the definition of structured literacy and refers to the science of reading. Section 7 modifies the requirements for the screeners that districts administer and the uses of the screener. Section 8 delays by 1 year the deadline for districts to use only evidence-based literacy interventions. Section 9 strikes a reference to oral in reference to academic language development. Section 10 requires curricula and materials to be evidence-based but not approved. It requires districts to use the commissioner's template for their local literacy plans and districts to report on teacher and staff training by grade level. Section 11 is new language relating to dual language immersion programs. It requires these programs, if they're selecting evidence-based screening tools, training, curriculum, or literacy intervention materials after July 1, 2025, to establish an advisory committee to identify those materials, trainings, tools in the program's target language. It limits the program's compliance with the READ Act to apply only when providing instruction in foundational reading skills in English. It modifies the local literacy plan requirements for the programs and exempts them from complying with specific READ Act requirements for the 25-26 and 26-27 school years. Section 12 broadens the requirement relating to persons using approved screeners. It broadens it to include all external partners offering literacy supports in schools. Section 13 narrows the types of special education teachers required to have READ Act training. It expands the lists of persons and organizations that can provide required professional development to teachers, and it extends by 1 year the provision that allows districts to count 5.5 hours of READ Act training, allowing that to count as an instructional day, and also expands it to include secondary schools. Section 14 ends the, this is one of several sections relating to the ending the department's partnership with CARI on June 30th, 2025. It requires the department to complete READ Act implementation activities without CARI. Section 15 relates to dual language immersion programs. This requires the department to develop guidance, identify materials and professional development opportunities, and make recommendations related to literacy for dual language immersion programs. Section 16 again relates to the termination of the partnership with CARI on June 30th, and it requires the department to post the web on its website the rubric used to evaluate curriculum. Section 17 and 18 relate to ongoing and future reviews of literacy materials and requires the rubrics for these reviews to be posted on the department website. Section 19 again is the department's partnership with CARI expiring. Section 20 requires reporting on teacher preparation program completers who pass the required exam performance assessment. Section 21 requires instruction on reading to be based on the science of reading, and teacher prep programs requires Pelsby to post on its website the rubric used to determine whether a program's reading instruction complies with the READ Act. Section 22 requires Pelsby to adopt rules requiring applicants for Tier 3 and 4 licenses in elementary education to demonstrate knowledge, skill, and ability to teach the science of reading. And that requirement can be met either through a performance assessment or satisfactorily completing training from approved facilitator or other provider whose training is approved under the READ Act. Section 23 requires the Reading Corps to use a department-approved screener. Section 24 modifies the 23 session law with the funding for CARI, since that is terminating on June 30th. Section 25 requires Pelsby's final reading audit to include the rubric to conduct the audit of teacher preparation programs and evaluate alignment with the science of reading. Section 26 modifies the session law relating to carry and volunteer training so that the appropriation would cancel back on July 1. Section 27 is the appropriations for the READ Act, including the $40 million. And then, Mr. Chair, Article 12 is the forecast that this committee has previously reviewed.
Thank you, Ms. Baer.
Mr. Chair, members, Article 12 is the forecast article. This is the correction to the 2025 appropriations and matches the bill that you've passed to Ways and Means, House File 2433.
Thank you. Ms. Beckel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Solveig Beckel, House Fiscal. There are a number of spreadsheets in your packet. For ease of identifying it, it's the one where the numbers are the largest. So we're going to use the one that says at the end of the second line, in the top left-hand corner, change only. Change only. And that was updated 4/27/2025 at 1:20 p.m. And that's that date stamp is in the upper right-hand corner. So many of you have seen these spreadsheets before, but not all of you, so I'm just going to run through that very briefly. This is a change-only spreadsheet, so what I'm not showing here is the February 2025 forecast numbers, but just know that that is the base upon which these numbers are changing from, if that makes sense. The bolded boxes at the top show the targets, which you've heard before, but again, we're $40 million for fiscal years 26 and 27, and $0 for fiscal years 28 and 29. The first column is just the line number. The second column is the program information. And then the first set of three columns, that is fiscal years 24 and 25. We're not going to see too many changes there because that is the current biennium we're in. We're almost done with fiscal year 25 currently. That will end June 30th, 2025. The next three are fiscal years 26 and 27. That is the biennium that you are appropriating for. And then fiscal years 28 and 29, those are what we consider the tails or the out years. And those are that is the biennium that you are setting the base for. So let's see, for the general education program changes that this bill has, on line three, you can see the basic supplemental revenue aid increase. And again, this was previously referred to as the local optional revenue aid. So this bill changes that to basic supplemental revenue aid, and it increases the funding for this by adding an additional tier of entirely aid. So this is just all aid to school districts. And that is worth $70.975 million in the first biennium and $80.513 million in the second biennium. Other general education programs include, on line six, the Compensatory Revenue Task Force. That's $110,000 in fiscal year 26 only. On line seven, Consolidation Transition Aid. So this is an ongoing aid increase. It increases the per pupil amount of funding for consolidation transition. Line eight is the unemployment aid additional funds. So these are funds that will go to the unemployment account in the special revenue fund and will go towards paying for schools' costs for hourly school workers' unemployment. So this is a one-time appropriation of $30 million in fiscal year 26 only. Jumping down to the education excellence area, on line 12, you can see full-service community schools appropriation savings, and then on line 13, the same thing but an extension. This is effectively just saying that the fiscal year 25 appropriation for the full-service community schools is being allowed to be used until the end of fiscal year 2026, excuse me. They were asking for an extension for that. Line 14 is for the Minnesota Association of Alternative Programs STARS program, and so they are receiving $55,000 each year in the first biennium only. Line 15 is the Minnesota Center for the Book reduction, so they still retain their funding in the first biennium, but they are being removed from the tails, so that's a savings of $400,000 in the tails. Line 16 shows the Minnesota Math Corps program increase, so they are receiving an increase of $1 million in the first biennium only. Line 17 shows the Minnesota Youth Council from the Minnesota Alliance with Youth increase, so they were receiving no funding for the 26-27 biennium, so now they're receiving $375,000 a year, but that's for the first biennium only. Line 18 is the reduction to the Sané Foundation, so they'll retain that $1.5 million in fiscal year 26, but then they are reduced to $750,000 in fiscal year 27, and then they do not have base funding. Line 19 shows the reduction to the Starbase Minnesota program, so they will again retain their 26-27 funding, but then they are reduced by $1 million in the tails. Moving down to the READ Act, so this line, line 22, shows the termination of the partnership with the Center of Applied Research and Educational Improvement. So they were appropriated $4.2 million in the fiscal year 24-25 appropriation. It is estimated that $1.918 million will cancel, so that is a savings to the general fund. Page 2, line 23. Is the READ Act implementation after the CARI partnership termination. So these are just, this is administrative funding for the Minnesota Department of Education to continue the work that CARI would have done post the partnership termination. So that's $875,000 in the first biennium and $350,000 in the second biennium. Line 24 is just the cancellation of the paraprofessional and volunteer training that CARI was going to do prior to the termination, and that is $375,000 in cancellations in fiscal year 25. Then on line 25 is the $40 million approved by both caucuses. Well, this whole thing is approved by both caucuses, right? For the READ Act compliance for school districts. Moving on to teachers, line 29, there's a reduction to the Black Men Teach program. Again, they keep their first biennium funding, but then there is a $1 million reduction to the 28-29 biennium. Line 30 shows the reduction to the Coalition to Increase Teachers of Color and Indigenous Teachers. They keep their first biennium funding, and then it is removed from the tails. Line 31 shows the special education apprenticeship programs increase. They did receive $1.03 million in fiscal years 24 and 25, so they're receiving $6 million in fiscal years 26 and 27. Line 32 shows the reduction to the student support personnel aid. It is being reduced from roughly $48, $49 per pupil to $40 per pupil in the first biennium and then $42 per pupil in the second biennium. So you're seeing savings of $13.678 million in the first biennium and $11.304 million in the second biennium. Down to special education, line 35 shows the special education transportation reimbursement reduction from 100% down to 95%, but not including the homeless and highly mobile students. So that has a savings to the state of $29 million roughly over the first biennium and about $24 million in the second biennium. Line 36 shows the reduced expenditures that school districts, the reduced expenditures the state will have from being able to bill their unemployment insurance costs for special education paras to the unemployment insurance account now that there's $30 million more in that account for fiscal year 26. Because of that, we are seeing some reduced expenditures in special education funding. Talk to me afterwards. It's so fun. Not fun, but very interesting. So that has a reduced expenditure to the state of $21.537 million in the first biennium and $2.922 million in the second biennium. Down to facilities, the long-term facilities maintenance roof repair and replacement provision has a cost of $9.6 million in the second biennium only. Then to nutrition, a line 42 shows the summer school food service replacement aid reduction. That's what it was. Then that is just taking that same amount of money, that $150,000 per year, and reallocating it not to MDE, but to districts for implementation of the summer electronic benefit transfer program. So you can see that on line 43. Page 3 has the library's changes. On line 46, you can see the reductions to the school library aid repeal. So in fiscal year 26, it is not the entire reduction to the school library aid. Schools are, of course, allowed to keep their fiscal year 25 cleanup payment, but otherwise it is all the appropriations for the school library aid for those other years. So that has a savings to the state of $45 million in the first biennium, roughly, and $47 million in the second biennium. Line 47 just shows that the school library, state school librarian, would also not have funding under this funding stream any longer, but the state school librarian themselves is not removed with this language. Moving down to the state agencies, line 51 shows those legal services costs for the Minnesota Department of Education, $4 million in the first biennium only. Line 52 and 53 shows those savings from funds that would have canceled otherwise from the Office of the Inspector General and the specific learning disability rulemaking funds. Then those are the total general fund changes. You can see that there is a savings of $4.293 million in fiscal years 24 and 25. As well as spending of $44.293 million in fiscal years 26, 27, that nets to $40 million, which is the target. And, of course, it nets to zero in fiscal years 28 and 29, which is the target. Below that is just the special revenue fund changes, just showing that the unemployment insurance appropriation of $30 million goes into that special revenue account and then has expenditure authority. Mr. Chair, that is the spreadsheet.
Thank you, Ms. Beckel. And again, to Mr. Strom, Ms. Para, and Ms. Beckel, thank you. We've seen you in the wee hours, and you all wear capes. With that, members, we do have a number of testifiers, and I'll be starting with Commissioner Jett. And after Commissioner Jett, I'm going to try to get through the list the best we can. Hopefully we can get everybody in. That's my goal. 2 minutes for each one. Commissioner Jett, of course, you have the courtesy of more time. So, Commissioner Jett, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record, and you may begin.
Good morning, Chair Kreisha, Chair Yuki, and members. My name is Willie Jett, Commissioner of Education.
And, Commissioner, I'm sorry, a little closer to the mic. That might be my age, or it might be the technology you pick.
It's probably not your age, Chair Kreisha. It's just me. So with that, I'll start over. Good morning, Chair Kreisha, Chair Youakim, and members. My name is Willie Jett, Commissioner of Education. Thank you for the opportunity to provide remarks on the House Education Budget Omnibus. Together, we passed important legislation in 2023 and 2024, and the state significantly progressed on a range of critical education programs on behalf of Minnesota students, educators, families, schools, and communities. We made key fundamental investments, including the automatic inflator for the general education formula. This will provide more assurance for our schools that additional flexible funding for our all programming will come each year. We made sure that no child is hungry while at school by providing free breakfast and lunch during the school year for all our students. And we invested in special education and English learner cross subsidies, boosted compensatory funding, made advancements in literacy with the READ Act, opened unemployment insurance during the summer term for the essential hourly workers who help our schools, and created a new aid supporting our schools with hiring of student support personnel across the state. I know the bill before us today took many weeks, of conversations between the chairs, and we are appreciative of Chair Cresha's and Chair Joachim's effort and work in putting a proposal together that continues to protect many of the critical investments from the last biennium and the budget target that helped maintain much of the progress made over the last 2 years. Thank you, chairs, for including proposals from the governor's budget, specifically the proposal to repurpose the fund for the summer food service program to be distributed to schools for their work on uploading data for the summer electronic benefit transfer program, as well as extending the full service community schools grant and clarifying language for the American Indian teacher preparation grants to be specifically used for pre-kindergarten through grade 12 settings. Thank you as well for including funding for MDE's legal cost budget. We are appreciative of the continued and added funding to the READ Act to continue the state's support of ensuring all of our students can read well. We look forward to working with the House and the Senate on the best statutory language and ensuring that we have the right resources and timelines for MDE and the regional literacy networks to carry on critical implementation work. Lastly, we know the decisions around reductions are not easy, and while I know it was a difficult decision, we are also appreciative of the proposal around reforms to special education transportation to help balance our state's budget. I would also like to make the committee aware of some of the concerns that we have in this bill. While we are appreciative of the inclusion of the compensatory revenue task force and the funding for it, we have heard from districts across the state that the formula itself also requires a modification. And we are hopeful that as we continue conversations this session, the chairs and members also consider one-time funding for compensatory revenue that support some of the most, some of our most at-risk and underserved students. While we're also appreciative of funding for hourly school worker unemployment insurance, we want to strongly urge the committee to reconsider the decision to remove this essential benefit in the future. This benefit supports some of our lowest paid educators and makes the prospect of returning to schools the following year much more viable when there are not adequate opportunities over the summer. Lastly, I would ask the committee to reconsider the decision to not include funds for fighting fraud by incorporating the governor's $550,000 for Department of Education's Office of Inspector General, a critical component of the governor's anti-fraud and program integrity package. And finally, I strongly encourage the committee to reconsider funding MDE's operating adjustments so the agency may continue to support Minnesota's students, educators, and schools. And I want to conclude that we are appreciative of this bill, incorporating many of the governor's proposals, and have a shared understanding of the difficult task facing the House. With less than a month in this session, we are committed to partnering with you on the work ahead of us, leveraging what we have built together over the years to accomplish our goal of a measured and responsible approach of investing in our state's public education system. Thank you, Chair Cresha and Chair Joachim, for allowing me the time to provide these comments.
Thank you, Commissioner. If you'll hang on for 1 second. Chair Joachim, any comments for the Commissioner? Thank you for your testimony, Commissioner. I appreciate the tenor of which you approached the committee. I think that my only comment would be in hearing how you approach this and what we've done at committee, what we're really looking for is an invitation to continue these conversations going forward. And I hope that we can continue to do that. I think that that base has been laid. So thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you, sir.
With that, to the testifiers, I'm going to call you up two at a time. Lauren Carpenter and Dan Alstrom. And a reminder to all the testifiers, we're going to hold you to 2 minutes each so we can get through our list. So on deck will be Kathy Briggs and Renee Waringer. Lauren Carpenter, if you'd state your name for the record, you can begin your testimony, please.
Yeah, good morning, Chair and members. My name is Laura Carpenter. I am an organizer for SEIU, but I'm here today as a mom of a kid who needs special education services. Because of unemployment insurance, the summer of 2023 was the first time my kid's education that they didn't have to say goodbye to their para at the end of the school year. Because she was able to get unemployment insurance, my kid's para was able to work summer school. She was in the same program as my kid, and they both really loved it. Over the 2 years where my child had the same para, they made a ton of progress. My child is dyslexic and autistic, and those are the years in fourth and fifth grade that they became a reader. They were really happy and proud. how do you individualize education to a student's needs if you don't actually know the child? Having the same para allowed my kid to access their education in a new way. These are important jobs that make a difference in our kids' lives, and it takes really special people to do them well. Every time I get a call from school that something has gone wrong for my child, it's because they were short-staffed that day. Before unemployment insurance, they were constantly understaffed, and we frequently started the school year with multiple para jobs open. It got so bad once that they gave my child and their classmates, their disabled peers, a week of excused absences because they couldn't educate them that week. School staffing is still tight, but because of unemployment compensation, I have not gotten one of those dreaded calls about something bad happening at school because of short staffing in the last 2 years. Repealing unemployment insurance for school workers will harm Minnesota's kids, including mine. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Mr. Alstrom.
Good morning, chairs and members. I'm Dan Alstrom, head of school at Heilacher Minneapolis Jewish Day School and part of the Minnesota Association of Independent Schools, a group of independent schools from across the state. I just want to say how much we appreciate the Delete Everything Amendment, especially protecting non-public pupil aid. Thank you to the chairs and the whole committee. We know that how hard these decisions are. Independent schools like ours already don't receive counseling for K-6, and we're all working with tight budgets and struggling to pay teachers what they deserve. So we really empathize with the challenges you're facing too. We ask that you please hold strong on this as you head into the conference committees. Thank you so much for your time and leadership. We're grateful for your commitment to all Minnesota students, and we look forward to working together to keep education strong across the state. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Kathy Briggs and Renee Warner. And Ms. Briggs, if you'd state your name for the record and begin your testimony, please.
Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Kat Briggs, and I'm a school bus driver for Independent School District 196 and a member of SEIU. We fought for more than 20 years to win the same basic economic security that every other worker in the state has. The repeal of unemployment in this bill is a betrayal of low-wage workers across the state. Driving a bus isn't an easy job. Basically, we're driving a one-room schoolhouse through traffic, and today it will be worse because it will be a flying billboard in the storms with screaming children on it that are scared of thunder and lightning. In the summer, the weeks when there is no summer school, I got an unemployment check for about half of what I make during the school year, which is already not much. That little bit of economic security meant I didn't have to choose between taking care of my kids at school and my grandbabies. If the legislature takes away my unemployment benefits, there's no way I'll be able to balance my family budget. I will have to resign. It is critical that we have the best people to transport our most precious cargo, our kids. Children need consistency in their lives. That's why they need the same bus drivers, chaperones, food service workers, paras, and other staff year to year. Since the UI law change, there has not been a back-to-school staffing crisis. It's easier to retain staff and fill hard-to-fill jobs like summer school. Now that workers won't have to be asked to go from financial crisis to financial crisis with no safety net. Politicians tell us all the time how much they appreciate our work, but for most, it's just talk. Laws like unemployment were more than lip service. Minnesota showed us that you value us and the work we do. If you care about our security or the children we serve, you will vote against this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Ms. Warner.
My name is Renee Warner. Can you hear me? Thank you all for hosting this, and thank you for all you do for all of us in the state of Minnesota. I am a special education assistant, which is a para, as well as a parent of a student who received special education services in Minneapolis Public Schools.
I'm urging you to oppose any and all efforts to repeal unemployment insurance for hourly school workers. My son, a proud South High School graduate, thrived in an environment that nurtured his potential and supported him in achieving academic goals and functional goals. SEAs played a critical role in his success. They guided him through challenges with skill, creativity, patience, and care, whether by providing step-by-step support for a science project or finding unique incentives, like introducing him to their beloved corgis to motivate him. The brilliant SEA brought her 5 corgis to school for a visit with my son. SEAs are the vital link in the last block in special education, building relationships and fostering academic and functional growth in students. However, the current 10-month job classification leaves them unpaid for 2 months each summer, this year June 9th through August 27th, with limited work opportunities in the Minneapolis School District summer school setting. Many SEAs are forced to find temporary work for that time, go without pay, or leave their job altogether, creating instability for the programs and the students who depend on them from year to year. 2 years ago, SEAs gained statutory UI eligibility, aligning their rights with other trades experiencing mandated or intermittent breaks. Continuing UI benefits is crucial for providing stability for students and maintaining a workforce that is experienced, committed, and competent. UI benefits also have a positive ripple effect on the local economy, ensuring that workers can contribute to their own communities. By voting to preserve UI eligibility for school workers, you are investing in the well-being of students, families, and the larger community. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. William Schwant and Tim Benz. I hope I'm getting the last names correct. And Mr. Schwant, if you'd state your name for the record and begin your testimony, followed by Mr. Benz.
Thanks, Mr. Representative Kresha. You're betting $1,000 on my name so far this year. My name is William Schwant. Thank you to the chair and committee members for allowing me to speak today. I'm a special education assistant in the Bloomington Public School System. Our elite school employees are the underpaid and underappreciated backbones of our schools. We make school happen. We transport, feed, and support students in the classroom. We make sure buildings are cleaned and phones are answered. Unemployment insurance is the lifeline to help these employees financially survive during the months that school is not in session. The Economic Policy Institute states that for a single person to live a modest lifestyle in the Twin Cities today, it's roughly $50,000 a year. The median earnings for paraprofessionals in my school district is less than $30,000 a year. UI is that little difference that helps us survive but does not make up that difference. There are some myths associated with UI that I've heard repeatedly during this session. First, that districts can't afford it. Right now, if my district had to pay for UI, it would make up less than 0.5% of their total budget for the year. Second, a myth that was actually perpetrated in a quote by the House Speaker last week that we are paying people to stay home and not educate students. And that's not true at all. UI is only available during the summer when there are not students available to educate. And the last myth is that UI does not help retain employees. In my district, when you eliminate those who have retired or those who have moved on to become teachers, we have reduced summer turnover by 20%. I want to close by using a quote attributed to Martin Luther King Jr. that says, "Budgets are a moral document. It shows what those who are making the budget value. What you are doing with this budget and the elimination of UI shows that you do not value hourly school workers and you do not value the work we do. As long as this provision remains, I urge everyone to vote against this bill. Thank you."
Thank you for your testimony. Mr. Benz.
Good morning, Chair Kresha, Chair Joachim, and members of the committee. My name is Tim Benz, and I'm president of Mindependent, a statewide organization representing 181 non-public schools and 41,000 students. First, on behalf of our member schools and students, thank you. Thank you for preserving the funding for critical services for our students and families that they rely on, transportation, nursing, counseling, and textbooks. I can assure you this is welcome and affirming news. Nearly 73,000 students attend non-public schools in Minnesota, and the average size of a non-public school is 165 students. Our student population is diverse and reaches every corner of the state, and they work diligently to end educational inequities. By preserving these critical services, you have ensured students will arrive to school safely and efficiently, and all students will have access to health care, learning materials, and mental health services. This is particularly important as many Minnesota students will likely enroll in public and non-public schools at different times during their K through 12 journey. This funding not only supports all students, but also ensures continuity of services when students move between public and non-public schools. In closing, thank you again for ensuring equitable access and services for non-public school students and the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you for your testimony. Anita Davis and Erica Walls. And I very much appreciate everyone sticking to the time constraints. Ms. Davis, if you would start with your name and you can begin your testimony, please.
Good morning, Chairman Kreisha and Co-Chair Joachim. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today. My name is Anita Davis, and I'm the principal of Holy Trinity Catholic School in South St. Paul. First, I want to express my heartfelt gratitude for your decision not to cut non-public pupil aid. Your support is deeply appreciated and sends a clear message that all Minnesota students matter, regardless of their school choice. At Holy Trinity, 68% of our students rely on tuition assistance, making this additional funding essential. It supports key services like textbooks, testing, nursing, counseling, transportation, all of which directly impacts our students' learning. This funding, managed by our local school district, goes straight to the heart of what matters most, our students. We are especially thankful for this funding as it helps us meet one of our most pressing needs, textbooks, particularly reading and math. These resources are essential for building a solid academic foundation. We're also thankful that some members of the House have proposed increasing this aid. Your support helps us continue providing an excellent education to our students, strengthens our communities, and supports the future of our state. Thank you again for your time, your leadership, and your unwavering support for all Minnesota children.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Walls.
Good morning, Co-Chair Kreisha and Co-Chair Joachim. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you this morning. My name is Erica Walls, and I'm the head of school at Ave Maria Academy, an independent Catholic school in Maple Grove, Minnesota. I'm here today representing over 200 students and 124 families who, as Minnesota residents, thank you for not cutting non-pupil public aid in your bill. This process has brought to light that this aid does not go to our school or any other non-public school. These funds are managed by our local school district and go directly to the Minnesota children we educate. With this decision, Minnesota will continue to provide the necessary textbooks, instructional materials, and standardized testing needed for academic growth and success for our students. I'd also like to offer a personal thank you. Thank you for providing Minnesota children with equal access to life-changing educational opportunities by providing them with the essential educational materials, nursing care, counselors, and transportation that all children need and deserve to thrive. I'm also deeply grateful to hear that some members of the House have legislation asking for an increase to this aid. So we're very thankful that you have not cut this aid in your bill. Committee co-chairs and members of the committee, thank you again for your continued support and service to our state and to the education of all of Minnesota's children. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next we'll have Mike Rogers and then Katina Taylor, and I believe Nicole Ave Lamont, we're going to take remote testimony, if possible. So, Mr. Rogers, if you would state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Co-Chair Kreisha and Co-Chair Joachim and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify this morning. My name is Michael Rogers. I'm the president of Risen Christ Catholic School in South Minneapolis. My main reason for being here today is to thank you for not eliminating non-public pupil education aid and non-public pupil transportation aid. Sustaining this aid is essential for the children and families of Risen Christ and for all Minnesotans. Risen Christ was established over 30 years ago and today is the only non-public dual immersion school in the state of Minnesota. We are a K-8 school serving 315 students. 97% of our students are students of color. Over 90% qualify for free and reduced price lunch. 75% are English learners. Many of our students are first and second generation immigrants whose parents are sacrificing enormously to give them a strong education to serve their unique needs. At Risen Christ, students learn both English and Spanish, opening doors for them and for their whole families, providing a path out of poverty and toward a bright future. For over 50 years, non-public pupil transportation aid and non-public pupil education aid have given parents the resources and the ability to choose the school that provides what their children need. The aids allow them to make this choice because they provide direct supports for their children. Without them, our families would have difficulty even getting to our school, and they would not have the essential services of nursing, counseling, and educational materials that this aid provides. We have a daily average attendance rate of 94% at Risen Christ. Such commitment is made possible by the funding that gets the children to school and that provides the services they receive there. On behalf of the students and families of Risen Christ, I thank you again for sustaining non-public pupil education aid and non-public pupil transportation aid. All parents in Minnesota deserve to have access to the best educational program for their children. These aids allow that choice to continue for the benefit of all Minnesota children.
Thank you for your testimony. Ms. Taylor.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair and House Committee members. My name is Katina Taylor. I am a special educational assistant of 27 years and counting. I'm currently on full-time release serving as the educational support professional president for Minneapolis Federation of Teachers. I am here today to express my opposition to any and all efforts to repeal unemployment insurance for school workers. In 2023, the state of Minnesota made a historic decision to extend the same unemployment benefits long available to construction workers to hourly school employees, a group that is predominantly women and among the most racially diverse in nearly every school. Before this change, it was common for school districts to lose some of their most dedicated ESPs each summer, and they sought other employment, often better paid, to make ends meet. Now, with their access to unemployment insurance, ESPs can now pay their rent and feed their children during summer months. As a result, school districts see less turnover. This stability benefits schools financially, since recruiting and training staff is costly. It brings relief to educators who now know there's a safety net in place for their families during the off months. In Minneapolis, not all ESPs use this program, but all value the peace of mind that it provides. For students, especially those with special learning needs, this means continuity and stability. Many thrive by working with the same ESP 1 year to the next year, something they lose when their trusted support professional leaves for the summer. We give everything we have to support Minnesota's next generation. Now we need Minnesota to support us back. I urge the Minnesota legislature to protect unemployment insurance for school workers and oppose any efforts to repeal the program passed in 2023. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your testimony. Laura Mogelson and Sarah Burt. And Ms. Mogelson, if you'll state your name for the record, please begin your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Laura Mogelson, and I am here from the Minnesota Association of Colleges for Teacher Education. Thank you, Chair Krisha and Chair Joachim and members of the committee. On behalf of MACD, I'm here to thank you for the work you have done so far this session and for the decisions that you made to fund important programs related to teacher preparation.
As you know, a well-prepared and supported teacher workforce is vital for the success of students in Minnesota schools. As I shared earlier in this session, there are many programs that work together to support the future of teachers of Minnesota. Thank you for maintaining healthy funding for Grow Your Own, the Special Education Pathway, PELSPE Teacher Preparation Grants, and residency programs. There is value in supporting multiple funding streams for teacher preparation. The Special Education Pathway, for example, allows districts to apply for funding to directly support their non-licensed and Tier 2 teachers to receive training for special education licensure, a significant shortage area in Minnesota. Another example is residency program funding, which is essential because it directly supports the sustainability of teacher residency programs that are working to prepare teachers in special education, ESL, world language, and rural Minnesota teachers. When you begin your work in the conference committee, maintaining for these different pathways is going to be incredibly important and a return on your investment as these programs deepen partnerships and use this funding to recruit and build on their successes. Thank you for keeping them a priority as you move into the next phase of the negotiation process, and thank you so much for your work for the state of Minnesota.
Thank you for your testimony. Ms. Burt.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Sarah Burt. I'm a lobbyist with Education Minnesota. We represent 84,000 members across the state. Minnesota is facing an educator shortage crisis due to the chronic underfunding of public education for decades. We often say student learning conditions are educator working conditions. Nearly 9 out of 10 schools in Minnesota are severely impacted by the shortage. This is due to high levels of burnout, low pay. Teachers make 31% less than other professionals in the state with the same credentials. Teacher pensions are not the retention tool they were created to be, and the spiraling cost of healthcare is unaffordable for these workers. Not to mention that hourly school workers who support every space in a school where children are learning are the lowest paid workers in our school communities. This creates instability in the educator workforce, which has the greatest impact on students of color, students with disabilities, and students in rural areas. In this bill, we appreciate the investments in compensatory aid. However, we do not believe that the funds should be distributed via a district distribution plan. We have major concerns with the teacher apprenticeship language in this bill. We need a statewide solution to a statewide problem, not just rewarding individual districts who are able to advocate for themselves to focus on their own retention issues. The way this is written, we would like to see some changes as well to the Student Support Personnel Aid section, lines 32.25 and 32.26. We believe the way this is written, districts will hire people without the proper licensure. We have major concerns with the provision to repeal unemployment insurance for hourly school workers. Simply put, this is an anti-worker and anti-labor position, and we urge you to vote against any bill or amendment that contains the repeal of this critical benefit the legislature extended to these workers. You all have heard years worth of testimony on the economic well-being of these workers. It is shameful to reverse course on providing them the same benefit that all other seasonal workers in Minnesota have access to. We urge you to do the right thing for these essential workers and vote against the DE to House File 1388 and House File 2433. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Matt Shaver and Joey Thienan. And then it'll be Denise Dietrich and Scott Kroonquist, and then we'll be going to remote testifiers. Mr. Shaver, if you would state your name for the record and begin your testimony, please.
Chair Krisha, Chair Uakim, members of the committee, good morning. My name is Matt Shaver. I'm the Senior Policy Director at Allies. We advocate for policies to improve outcomes for students. Thank you for the opportunity to share our thoughts on the budget agreement this morning. Thank you for the $424 million increase in per pupil funding this biennium. This bill proposes to invest over $17 billion in K-12 schools in the next 2 years in just the general education base, a significant bipartisan commitment to kids in Minnesota. Thank you as well for the continued funding for universal meals. We're also glad to see another investment in the work of the READ Act, as well as many sensible policy tweaks there. This will help schools continue to shift practices toward the science of reading. There is a missed opportunity to rethink literacy incentive aid. As currently constructed, literacy incentive aid sends more money to districts with fewer struggling readers and less money to districts with more struggling readers, leaving our upper elementary students who missed out on teachers trained in the science of reading with an imbalance of intervention resources. We're also glad to see the task force proposal on compensatory revenue. The duties outlined here in this bill are holistic and will hopefully help us have a long overdue conversation as a state about this incredibly important funding stream to support students in poverty. At the same time, it's disappointing to see the building allocation decrease to 60%. It's pretty simple. Kids in poverty generate additional funds for their school. Those dollars should be used to support their education. If students in poverty at school A generate $100,000 in compensatory dollars, and the legislature lets their district move $40,000 of those dollars to school B, it will be very difficult for the legislature to tell if those $100,000 improve the outcomes of students in poverty at school A. Finally, there is a missed opportunity to make targeted investments in chronic absenteeism. The policy work and previous allocations in this area are laudable, but with 200,000 chronically absent students, this cannot be a one-and-done effort. One area of recommendation is more timely data reporting. This bill proposes over $4.7 million in a biennium to MDE to modernize district data submissions, which builds on a $3.2 million investment for the same goal last biennium, which builds on $6 million of federal ARP money MDE used on the same goal in 2021. When I go to the statewide report card this morning and see the most recent data on suspensions is from 2021, the most recent data is from 2023, when schools track this information daily, it begs the question, is the legislature willing to condition ongoing funding by setting clear goals for better performance in core functions, or are we not? Thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Mr. Schaefer. And Mr. Sinan.
Thank you, co-chairs Krisha and Joachim and members of the committee. My name is Joey Chenyon. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools. Chartered public schools, on average, serve more students of color, students living in poverty, and English language learners than traditional public schools, and are an essential part of a healthy public education ecosystem. This committee had to make incredibly difficult decisions due to predicted future deficits. We appreciate the chairs and members for their thoughtful work under tight timelines and unprecedented co-governing dynamics. We cannot emphasize this enough. Thank you for preserving funding for chartered public schools, which already operate on the margins with 25 to 30% less funding than traditional public schools. Even small cuts can be devastating and risk forcing some schools to close. Specifically, we want to thank House leaders for rejecting the governor's proposed cuts to funding for chartered public school students with disabilities and other reductions that would impact teaching and learning, and including changes to local optional revenue by converting it to a supplemental aid that includes charter schools at the base level. Local optional revenue is one of the major drivers of funding inequity between charter and traditional public schools, and as education costs continue to rise, including charter schools in this funding stream, even at a modest level, is critical and greatly appreciated. We look forward to continuing our partnership to advance funding equity for students in charter public schools, particularly by extending essential safety support through school safety revenue to our students. Also, because chartered public schools cannot levy, we want to emphasize the importance of including them in any long-term funding solutions to cover the ongoing costs of recent policy initiatives. This bill contains many positive provisions, and you achieved a great deal with limited resources. While time does not allow us to cover them all, we thank you for your thorough and thoughtful work.
Thank you, Mr. Chenin. And I do have that silent H now. Thank you. Denise Dietrich, Scott Kroonquist. Ms. Dietrich, if you'd like to state your name for the record and begin your testimony, please.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Chair Joachim, and members of the committee. My name is Denise Dietrich, and I'm here today on behalf of the Minnesota School Boards Association, where we represent all 331 public school districts across the state of Minnesota. So first of all, I would like to acknowledge and the challenges that this committee faced in assembling this omnibus bill. We commend your efforts to find bipartisan compromise, and under these circumstances where inevitably not everybody is going to get what they would had hoped for. So given the limited time today, I will just highlight a few of the key provisions in the bill. In Article 1, we sincerely appreciate the increase to state aid for the basic supplemental revenue, a flexible revenue source that will help districts meet their local needs. We appreciate the funding for the summer unemployment aid for hourly workers for one additional year. Absent an ongoing full state funding resources, we understand and support the decision to sunset the program after the summer term of 2028. In Article 3, we are grateful for the expanded uses, allowable uses for the student support aid, and that will help us better meet the needs of students locally. In Article 6, we strongly support the expansion of LTFM program to allow roof repair and replacement for all school districts. This is an equity issue. In Article 7, under the school nutrition, we appreciate the increased flexibility for the school nutrition fund 2 balances. This will help districts more efficiently and effectively meet the growing and demanding needs of serving more students each day in our school cafeterias. In Article 11, we very much support the $40 million one-time READ Act money. Our local school boards are deeply committed to the implementation of the READ Act and the promising potential that this has on student achievement. We want to once again say thank you for listening to the voices of school board members on the air in the areas of flexibility and funding. We greatly appreciate it and look forward to working with you in the weeks to come. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dietrich. And Mr. Kroonquist.
Thank you, Chairs Krishna and Joachim, and members of the committee. My name is Scott Kroonquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, and also speaking on behalf of the Association of School Administrators and School Principals this morning. Thank you for the opportunity to share a few brief comments and for your work this session. I'd like to highlight a few areas that we support. First, got to start off with thanking you for the House target and maintaining the link of the formula to inflation. This link provides an important measure of stability. And as I think you all know, even with that link, our member school districts are looking at in excess of $280 million in budget shortfalls next year. I also have to thank you for the increase in local optional revenue, or what would now be basic supplemental revenue. This funding stream has been frozen since 2014, and it is one reason why our school districts have faced budget challenges. As Ms. Dietrich noted, the READ Act funding is essential for a successful implementation. Thank you. Likewise, the roof repair and leveling the playing field there among school districts is very important, and the flexibility in the food service fund and student support personnel aid is also welcome relief and will help districts navigate the next 2 years. I also want to point out the funding for the special education teacher apprenticeship programs, which will help us address the significant shortfall of special education teachers. I do have to note a few areas of concern. The lack of hold harmless funding for the compensatory revenue program will create significant challenges for many school districts. We have some that are looking at a reduction of over $1,000 per pupil in compensatory revenue. Likewise, the reduction in the reimbursement for special ed transportation costs will increase the cross subsidy and add to budget challenges. We do appreciate the funding to ensure UI costs are covered for one more year, but there will be a gap between when that funding runs out and when the program expires, which again will result in districts needing to use general fund revenue to cover those costs. But thank you again for all of your work. We understand you have a difficult budget target and we're in difficult financial situations, and we appreciate your support and work. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And with that, we're going to go to our remote testifiers. So Nicole Ave-Lalamont and Teresa Greninger. And then Amber, you'll be third after that.
Hello, can you hear me okay?
We can. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you. Hello, my name is Nicole Ave-Lalamont. I am an educational support professional in the Minneapolis Public School District. As a special education assistant cadre for early childhood special education, I support 3 to 5 year olds throughout the city receiving services. I visit MPS schools, Head Starts, daycares daily to promote student independence, foster inclusion, and teach self-advocacy. We build relationships where kiddos learn to regulate and be safe in order to participate in school and their community. I love my job. I enjoy using my skills, experience to work in my community, and I want to stay in this profession. However, in order to be able to do that, I need to have access to unemployment insurance during the summer. I'm a single parent of 2 young kiddos attending MPS schools who also benefit from important ESP staff. And unemployment insurance is essential to hourly school workers like myself and those who serve my children. Unemployment insurance allows us to return to our school sites in the fall and provide experienced, committed and consistent education to students. I urge you to vote against any deal that does not include unemployment insurance for hourly school workers. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Teresa Greniger, Ms. Greniger.
Yes, thank you. My name is Teresa Greniger. I'm a member of AFSCME 65 Local 498. I work as a special education paraprofessional at King Elementary in Deer River. I'm testifying today to urge you to oppose this bill, which would terminate unemployment insurance for hourly school workers. Ending this benefit would be devastating to hourly workers and the communities they serve. In the 12 years I've been at King, our team has dwindled from 35 to 19 paras across departments. A main reason paras leave is because they cannot support themselves during the summer months. Suitable short-term work is difficult to find, and working a summer school program is only a few weeks. Paras often find different jobs and do not come back to work at school in the fall. As some of the lowest paid employees at a school with a starting pay of around $18,000 a year, we need support during the summer to make ends meet. Sunsetting the UI benefit would make the para shortage even worse. I asked five paras if they could stay without unemployment benefits. All five said no. These are staff members that absolutely love what they do and make a huge difference in our children's lives. The students I work with need the individual attention a para can provide. In some schools, special education students are not receiving the service minutes on their IEP because of lack of paras. Jeopardizing our financial support system does more than jeopardize our jobs. It jeopardizes our children's future. We need this benefit to ensure we can stay in our jobs and to attract more paraprofessionals to help make our students successful. Without it, retention issues will continue to worsen. I urge you to stand with hourly school workers and our children by preserving the unemployment insurance benefit. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. And with that, I believe we have one more. Amber Kinnear.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Amber Kinnear. I am a behavior support professional at ISD 917. I fall in the categories with ESPs. And I'm here to urge you not to end unemployment insurance for ESPs. All workers in Minnesota have access to unemployment insurance after the legislature granted this benefit to hourly school workers in 2023. The legislature righted a wrong when they extended this benefit to myself and my coworkers. I am a behavior support professional and deal with heartbreaking stories on a daily basis, and I work hard to alleviate and help the students I serve to work with through the trauma they experience in a difficult world. My coworkers and I work in a level 4 setting special education school, and the retention, as you can imagine, is rough. Unemployment insurance is something that makes it possible for many of our ESPs to come back the next school year. It is getting harder and harder to stay in a position I love because wages and high health care costs make it impossible to survive. But unemployment benefits have made it easier. I've noticed that it has made it easier for more co-workers to return in each fall due to the economic bridge unemployment insurance brings to our families. This is good for our students and good for our schools. This benefit is there for all seasonal workers, like construction workers, and it should not be taken away from hourly school workers. Please vote no on this bill, and thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. And with that, members, that concludes the section for the public testimony. We have about 10 minutes if members would like to have some general comments. Otherwise, we can go right into the DE. So any members' general comments before we do that? If not, thank you to all the testifiers. That concludes our public testimony, and there is some additional testimony in your folders. Members, before we adopt the DE, We're just going to go ahead and go right into that now. So then we'll go into member discussion again after the DE. So the chair renews the motion to adopt the DE amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
And the DE is adopted. Members, we now have in front of us any conversation on that, or should we go right to the amendment? Okay. With that, we do have an amendment in front of us, and let me jump down to my notes so I get this correct. So with that, members, we now have the A1 amendment. I believe this is being offered by Representative Sensenmira. Representative Sensenmira, to your amendment.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Chair, for all the work that you all did on this bill. I know that it was not easy, but I do want to put forward the A1 amendment, and I would like to ask for a roll call on it.
Representative Sensenmira requests a roll call. Roll call has been granted.
So just to explain the amendment, this amendment repeals the language, or gets rid of the language that would repeal the UI for hourly school workers. And I just met with hourly school workers in my district yesterday, and listening to their stories then and listening to their stories now made me think of this story that I heard about a hospital executive who was new. He was walking around a hospital introducing himself to different staff members, and he comes across someone who's wearing a janitor uniform. And he stops to ask the guy, you know, what do you do here? And the guy looks back at him and just says, I save lives. Because every person who is working at a hospital, they are mission critical. And I think that about that with our UI workers, right? Which of these jobs is not essential to educating students, getting them there safely, which I think, like, on a day like today where we're thinking about, I have a school group coming to visit me and I'm, like, terrified of them and that bus, right? That person is an essential role. Our custodians who make sure that our buildings are clean, that they are safe. I think that has never been more important than coming out of COVID, where we were asking them to make sure that it was safe to our students to come back to the building each day. Our nutrition services workers who make sure that our kids are fed. Or our paras, and we heard a lot about our paras, our ESPs, the ones who sit with our students, the ones who travel with our students, sometimes from year to year. We heard, you know, a parent say that she knows it's predictable. Every time something goes wrong for her kid, it's because of short staffing. It's because a para isn't there. These roles provide consistency, and our schools need them to survive. Our students need them to survive. And at the same time, we know that these roles are making less than a living wage, right? We heard someone say they make less than $30,000 a year. So the unemployment insurance, it doesn't even help them have a middle-class job. It just helps them survive. It helps them to stay in these roles. I have a real problem, and I think members of my caucus do too, on repealing this. You know, I'm sorry to all of the hourly workers who had to come back here today, right? I know I was talking to workers in my district who are trying to figure out, okay, how am I going to not be there on a Monday morning? What is that going to look like for my kids? These folks had to come for 20 years to the Capitol to testify, and they thought they were done, right? They thought that they had earned this benefit, that it was going to be solid, and now we're saying, well, actually, we couldn't come together to figure out how, in our whole funding formula, we couldn't figure out how to fund this, so we're going to take it away. And we know that if we take it away, it's an equity issue. We are taking it away from roles that are most likely to be women, most likely to be people of color. And just want to remind people, especially people who are not part of this debate last year, this is the only group to not get this benefit, right? So this is more than just like what's happened to our schools. This is a systematic thing where we've said every other worker in our state deserves to have unemployment insurance, because we know that unemployment can be unpredictable and we want to give you stability. And I finally want to just say, you know, we're having a debate about extending UI for a certain group. And I think it is unconscionable that we are having that same discussion, which, you know, I support that, at the same time that we are thinking about taking away UI from this group. So want to offer the A1 amendment. Passing this amendment would help me support this bill, and to encourage all others to vote yes on this amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Hill.
Thank you, Chair Krisha and Chair Joachim. Just a few comments. As I was driving in this morning, probably like many of you, I was thinking about a lot of things. Number one, if I was going to make it to the Capitol safely, had the knowledge in the back of my mind that the field trip kids wouldn't be able to see the horses today due to the weather. Four people came to mind, too, on that drive-in, and I want to talk about them briefly. I thank Representative Sensenmuir for her amendment because this will allow me, passage of this amendment will allow me to support the bill in total. The first person that came to mind was my mother. My mother worked for years as a paraprofessional. She was known as a 5-9er because she was offered 5.9 hours a day. And for those of you in the educational system, you know why 5.9 hours a day. And those 6 minutes would have made a big difference for her. She showed up every day. She served students in a level 3 EBD center, helping to keep them safe, helping the students who were dysregulated to find a calm and caring space every single day. I think about Mr. Todd, who picked up my daughters on the bus this morning at the bus stop, like he always does, right on time. Greets them all with a high five. The students love Mr. Todd. My kids talk about him constantly and the care that he provides from behind the wheel. I thought about Ms. Lori Smith, who I met here in this room when she came to testify on behalf of the Universal School Meals Program. She works up in St. Cloud as a nutritional worker, and it's clear to anyone who listened to her testimony how far above and beyond she goes to meet the needs of her students. And when offered an opportunity to work in the summer like she was during the pandemic, she towed that line and did great work. I'm thinking of my friend Shelley, who I work alongside with. Shelley does clerical work in the office, and students find her to be a safe and calming and reassuring presence. Oftentimes, students who are having the worst day of their year are there with Shelley as they try to find a way to regulate their behaviors. They're heroes, all of them, and there's thousands of other like them around the state of Minnesota. I thought about my friend who does incredible work in the field of concrete, and how each winter he finds himself accessing unemployment insurance. And I can't begin to find the reason why we should carve out a group of these heroic folks who do great work for our kids and our families every single day. And so when I link back on my 25 years in the classroom, today I'm thinking about the names and the faces of the hourly colleagues that I worked alongside. And I think it's important for me to point out, and I want to be very clear about this, our schools cannot operate without these people. These folks do great work. They do it every single day, and we owe it to them to provide the same benefits that every other worker in the state of Minnesota has access to. Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you both for the work that you put into this. To much like Representative Hill, adopting this amendment will allow me to support this bill more going forward. We've heard a lot about how these workers took these jobs knowing they were cyclical, that they'd be off for these months in the summer, and they should plan around that. But we have all kinds of jobs, whether that's construction jobs, whether it's manufacturing jobs, whether it's industrial jobs that have that same cyclical nature. And we don't seem to have any problem with those folks collecting unemployment to get by. And it's important to remember that the point of this unemployment, whether it is any of these industries, whether we're talking about our ESPs, whether we're talking about construction workers, or whether we're talking about miners, is to make sure that those workers are available to come back and fill those critical spots in those communities and those schools and those businesses so that they can continue to operate. While these are some of the lowest paid workers in our schools, they play an unbelievably outsized role in their responsibilities and what they do. They are in high-stress situations dealing with preparing food, driving buses, and people talked about weather today, or, you know, you look at some of these rural districts where these bus drivers are putting in hundreds of miles a day in some very difficult conditions. And then the folks serving the most vulnerable kids in our classrooms. These workers are not disposable. And showing value by allowing them to collect unemployment to make sure they're ready to come back to school when that next fall rolls around shows that they are not disposable. It shows that we value them, and that is important, that we value our workers. And I'll close with this. I hope that the districts, with this newfound flexibility, find a way to value those workers and ensure that they have places to come back to, and those workers want to come back to work to those districts. Because if we don't find a way to keep and retain those workers, these are going to be minor problems compared to what we're going to have to solve in the future. Thank you.
Representative Lee.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I'm speaking in support of Representative Sensenbrenner's amendment, and I'm going to gather myself. I really blame Rev Hill for this because he started with the story of his mom, and I wanted to speak today because today is my mom's birthday, and that's important because she has been an hourly ESP for more than 30 years at her elementary school in the district that I now represent. And because of her tenure, she's finally making a living wage. So, you know, support of this amendment and this passage would help me support the underlying bill. And I want to talk about her because even though my mom worked in education, my siblings and I always had to rely on reduced school lunch because she did not get a living wage while we were growing up. So I know how important UI is for hourly workers, and that's why we are fighting so hard to keep it. In the 30 years that she worked at her elementary school, my mom saw her students grow up and send their kids back to learn. During that time, she made home visits, found clothing and jackets for students in need, and even mentored a family of kids whose mom passed away, making sure that they got all the Hmong clothes that they would never get. And so, I share that, but also on a larger scale, she grew the school's plant sale into its annual fundraiser and curated many other school-wide events. I share this story just so folks remember ESPs are essential for student success in so many ways, and we cannot leave them behind. Thank you.
Representative Ray Rauer.
Thank you, Representative Lee, and thank your mom so much for me for her service. As a teacher for 20 years, I have a special appreciation for our hourly workers. In the classroom, I could not have provided the assistance and attention that our most vulnerable kids needed if I were alone. Our paraprofessionals worked hand in hand with me on a daily basis. Our hourly workers keep our schools thriving. They transport our kids safely, feed our kids nutritious meals, and make sure they're safe. They work with our most vulnerable kids day in and day out. They're often the first person our kids see in the morning and the very last person that they say goodbye to at the end of the school day. Our hourly workers are special people who want to work with kids and who know how to work with kids. This is a special skill. This is skilled labor, just like many of our other types of skilled labor. There's a shortage of our hourly workers across school districts and across the state today. Unemployment helps ensure continuity of workers across the year. We need to keep them and those folks that want to work with our kids. You heard how important it is from the parents speaking earlier in this meeting. Retaining those workers is how our kids thrive and how they succeed. Unfortunately, many school districts I've worked with have chose to balance the budget on the backs of our hourly workers. It was a historical injustice that our hourly workers were specifically excluded from receiving unemployment. We righted that wrong, and it is time to make sure that we keep what we did. With this amendment, I can vote for this bill. Without this amendment, I cannot. Thank you.
Representative Clardy.
Thank you, Representative Sensenbrenner, for bringing this important amendment forward. As you know, I've been in the schools for like almost three decades next year. And with that, I interact with hourly workers all the time. And we keep talking about the people that provide lunches or the people that do bus services, but there's so many other positions within the school that we don't think of. We think of people that work on the playground, the playground monitors. We think of people in the nurse's office, people that clean our buildings, people that are there all the time. So most of my decisions in this committee is it starts with the student. And if we're really concerned about the students and their mental health and their abilities to grow in a natural environment, for some of the kids, this is their stability. The people that work with them every day, the people that see them, sometimes in special ed, that special para that works with them from first grade that also kind of watches them all the way through fifth grade. So, and then also they're trained by the schools and the school system to do some of the, you know, de-escalation, and it's just the human aspect of it. So if we're looking for a safe environment for kids, or even like with the bus driver, knowing the family and where to drop the kids off, I can tell you about the kindergarten students that were dropped off at the wrong addresses. And so there's lots of levels of safety and stability. And speaking of stability, also you want a healthy staff. You want a staff that's cohesive. I know at the end of many years, we always talk about like, where are you going to be next year? And all the teachers are like, yep, I'm going to be back. And then the hourly workers are like, they don't know. Okay, they just don't know what's going on. So we need that stability as well, too. And then there's the assumption that just because you work at a school, you automatically get unemployment. Not true. Okay, they have to qualify for it just like any other position in the state. So you have to report and show that you're actively seeking for a position. As a teacher, I have a contract, so I know what I'm going to be making for the year, and I have a full contract. And I just kind of wonder if that's something that school districts could look closer at working with their unions in developing something like that that might take some of the pressure off of this. So thanks for bringing the amendment forward. I'm supporting your amendment. The bill, I can't support it without supporting our UI workers, our UI aspect.
Thank you. And Chair Joaquin, did you want to make a couple comments before I go to the vote?
Mr. Chair, I'll save my comments for after.
Thank you. So thank you, members. We'll now proceed to a vote on the A1 amendment. And I'll be recommending a no vote on our side to keep the agreement.
Kreisha.
Kreisha, no.
Joaquin.
Yes.
Jakeberg.
No.
Colardi.
Yes.
Altendorf.
No.
Bonner.
Yes.
Bennett.
No.
DePell.
No.
Engen.
No.
Green.
Yes.
Hill.
Yes.
Hudson.
No.
Johnson.
Yes.
Lee.
Yes.
Knudsen.
No.
Lawrence.
No.
Mueller.
Mueller votes no.
Perez Vega.
Perez Vega, yes.
Quam.
No.
Ream.
Ream, yes.
Ray Rauer.
Yes.
Reimer.
No.
Sensor Mura.
Yes.
Vernig.
Yes.
Joaquin.
Yes.
Thank you. Members, on a tied vote of 12 to 12, the amendment does not pass, and the motion does not prevail. Members, before we conclude on House Bill 1388, I would like to have final closing comments and thank yous by Chair Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I want to thank you again for working with us on the bill, and thank our nonpartisan staff and partisan staff, and we did a lot of thank yous last time. I still am extremely disappointed in the UI repeal, and we hopefully will rectify that eventually, because I'd like to go into conference with a strong provision that you and I can both fight for, and with the UI repeal in there, I won't be able to. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Joaquin. And members, this bill is about local control. funding flexibility and relief from mandates. I appreciate all the conversations and the collaborations we've had. I believe that we still need a strong position for our workers, and putting the money in the basic supplemental aid and giving the districts the ability to extend those jobs and enhance those jobs and find ways for recruitment, retention is very valuable. It's about creating more jobs and allowing the schools to be partners in that. And so I believe that opportunity is in front of them. We still have areas of disagreement, but as we look forward to conference committee, we have strong bipartisan on this agreement. And I hope that that message is heard loud and clear by the governor and the colleagues. I wish there was more flexibility, and I wish we were able to find other ways to empower our schools as they look at very uncertain and tough budget times. I believe we listened in this committee. I believe we listened well, and I believe this is a prudent bill. And with that, the chair lays over House File 1388 as amendment. Members, that it concludes our agenda, and I just want to take a moment to thank everyone, to thank Mr. Strom, Ms. Beckel, Ms. Para, Jody and Polly, and Connor, who's not here anymore, but our page, Natalie, Mars, Jacob, Robin, and Janelle. Thank you to all of the work you had, and certainly to Vice Chairs, our Vice Chair Bakeberg, and my colleague and respected member, Chair Joachim, and Chair Clardy, all right, Vice Chair Clardy. So thank you very much, members. We have to be on the House floor. And with that, we are adjourned.